Welcome to the Bring Your Lunch Pail Sports Podcast.
Let's go there!
Presented by Luke's Pizzas.
Remember, football is crazy, love is blind. Good luck, football, what a story.
Featuring Lucas Clark and Nigel Romaine.
I'm talking about sports, and I'm coming.
Now introducing your host, Tanner Retz.
Yes, sir. We're back for episode number 42 for the Bring Your Lunch Pail Sports Podcast. I got Luke and Nigel with me, and we have some things to talk about, but this is kind of the time of the year where sports are starting to kind of wind down and get a little bit in that lull. But the first topic I really wanted to hit was mine and Nigel's adventure of seeing the boys Salton High School varsity basketball team go up against Evergreen. Nigel, give me a quick breakdown of what you saw in that performance.
What I saw was a terrible coaching performance. That's
by Evergreen?
By Salton. Head coach Theo something?
That's rude.
I'm not sure what his name is.
Is this guy on the hot seat?
Yeah, I think he's on the hot seat.
He's 5-17 coming into his first year. Is that the type of message that Salton Athletics wants to send to their entire school? Yeah. To the town? To the city?
The city. No, the quick breakdown is, I guess, make it short and sweet. First half, Turks were in it the whole time. Kind of went down by like almost 10 right at in the last couple minutes. But their post player, Turks post player, was got hurt right at the end of that.
And he was the star of the game.
Yeah, he was the star of the first half for sure. Like he was a stud down there. So that was kind of took the air out of them a little bit, I think, at the end of the half. And then Evergreen had some kid that was like guard that was just kind of real slasher, like got to the rack constantly. I think he had pretty much every point just about that they had in the entire first half. And then second half came around and Teo made some nice adjustments, went into a full court press.
That's Coach Teo to you.
Yeah, Coach Teo went into the full court press. And
it was a great halftime adjustment.
Yeah, good adjustment. And he put he kind of had a couple guys rotating around, but he put a freshman kid that we had kind of talked about when we watched the football game. I don't know the kid's name, but freshman, really talented, stocky little little guy, short. He's probably like 5'2", but super quick, athletic, built kind of like Tyreek Hill style. Like he's pretty bulky for a small kid. And he put that kid in the shackles for the entire second half, pretty much. That guy did nothing. And so Turkeys stormed back into it, and then they got a lead and with like what 2.5 minutes left, and then it kind of all went downhill from there. So their other star player, their other guard was having some trouble with ball control on that, and kind of throwing some lobs down the court that wasn't working well. So they ended up losing. They hit a three at the end to, I think, make it a 5-point game. But it was a fun game, and I was impressed with Teo. Looked like he had control of the team. Everyone was like paying attention, and he made some good adjustments. So props to Teo. I thought he did a great job, and they got a young team, and so I think there's good things to come for the Turks. They're building something.
Yeah, I agree with all that. I mean, Teo had command of that team.
Yeah,
you can clearly see that he has the command of the locker room, which is.
Got to start somewhere.
Yeah. But, you know, we don't have a paper roster to show, like, what grades that all these kids were in, but I assume that they were all younger kids, like you were saying. Like, yeah. Did he actually confirm that?
I don't know. I never got.
But if they are younger, if they're all freshmen, sophomores, like, he does have something to build off of. I mean.
Yeah, I looked it up on Max Preps, and it was kind of hard to tell because I couldn't remember everyone's numbers. I think the guard that was pretty good is a senior, but outside of that, I'm just not really sure. I know that other guard was a freshman just because we had talked to Murph about it.
We'll have to get Coach Teo on the pod to give us a season recap once it winds down here.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea. But yeah, he's knowledgeable in the game, obviously, and so that shined through pretty well. And like, he had, you know, he's more of a lighthearted guy. He's not like the scream rah rah type. But when he needed to, you definitely like.
I guess that's where I kind of
buckle it in a little bit.
Yeah, and I think that's where I paused. Where I was most surprised is that Teo is a very soft spoken guy. So honestly, I was a little concerned about that.
Yeah, but when you saw it in person, I was like, no, he's got control.
And he got on him. Like, he was yelling at him when he needed to yell.
Yeah. So.
And he made the adjustments he needed to make, and it seems like the further they go down their season, the higher points that they're scoring.
Yeah.
So. It seems like he's very much improving this team. And looking at the roster here.
You got to remember that Teo's a dad now, so he's got that dad voice.
Yeah, that's true. He's got to have the dad voice.
It's pretty important, I feel like, if you're going to be a coach, you got to have that dad voice.
Yeah.
So I believe that wholeheartedly.
It looks like it's a split between, like, half of them are seniors and half of them are sophomores and the one freshman. And there's a couple that don't have their grade in there. But
yeah. Yeah, and I know because I went to the state game last year, and a couple of the guys on the team I definitely recognize, so I'm sure there were a couple upperclassmen in there. But yeah, I was impressed. I thought he did a good job. I wish they could have pulled out the victory, but it's tough out there, you know.
You know the other kid that they had playing post, number 23. Do you remember that kid?
Yeah, I remember him.
He's only a sophomore, and they have him on here at 6'5".
Yeah, he was a big boy. He didn't get as much playing time in the second half because they were going full court, but they kind of went small out there and just tried to run up and down the court on him and be kind of more fast paced. But that kid, when he was in there, when they were running the two posts, two big men out there, like that was effective. That guy looked pretty good.
Yeah, and you got a few more years to develop him too. So, yeah. And then number 14, the kid that actually took over during the second half, that was scoring a lot of their points, and then he kind of was just turning the ball over left and right in the last 2 minutes. He's only a sophomore too. So,
oh, really? Okay.
There's some promise right there with just those two kids, and then the freshman too. That if he can hit a growth spurt, I mean.
Future's so bright they need sunglasses.
Yeah, exactly.
So good for Teo. I do think he has something. I think he is building something there.
Yeah.
All right. Tell me about how you guys are doing the opposite of building but demolishing your volleyball team.
I don't think we need to go over that too much, but
all right, moving on.
We're in a bad little spell here, but that'll get fixed.
I was thinking about it. We're kind of like the 2013, 14, 15 Seahawks.
Okay.
And that two sessions ago and like in the like the summer we were really rocking, and like we'll call it the summer volleyball session, we made it to the championship and lost in the championship game, had a good, you know, pretty good game overall, though looked good. Next session indoor, we went and won the championship, everything was cruising, everyone was great. Then we lost in the semifinals in the next session. And much like the 2014 Seahawks that lost in the Super Bowl and had kind of a heartbreaking loss, then have completely collapsed since then and are now spiraling out of control. Some of that is because people were on vacation and out of town. We should have won a couple of those games for sure. But now that everyone's back, we haven't really been playing well.
Yeah, the realness is that about half of our team hadn't touched a volleyball since before Christmas, since our loss in the semifinals, and so I think we're still just working some of the rust off and getting back into volleyball, you know, playing shape, I guess.
Yeah.
So hasn't been enjoyable to say the least, but you know, you gotta go through your ups and downs.
Yeah.
Not everybody can be the Kansas City Chiefs and win every single Super Bowl, all right? Yeah, sometimes
we're not a dynasty club yet.
Tom Brady went like 8 years in between winning Super Bowls, so.
And now the salary cap's going to hit us hard and we're losing one of our players. It's just got to go back to the drawing board. I wouldn't mind taking a few of the girls from the team we played this week, because they had a girl. I don't know if she played volleyball for UW, but she had a UW athletics like shirt on.
She sure looked like she was on the team based off of her attire and her build and her ability.
And she was probably 5'10", maybe even a little taller than that.
Yeah, she might have been taller than me, so maybe right at 6 foot.
Maybe she was 6 foot. She could hammer it, and she had a great serve. Like she was talented. we had no answers for her the entire night. She just crushed us. She was the best player on their team, hands down. So, yeah, that was fun. I'd love to have her on our squad, but I don't think that's happening anytime soon.
Hey, Luke, I have a request. Can you queue up the – get ready for this. Can you get the Tucker Carlson soundbite ready for me?
I think so, yeah.
Okay, get that ready.
Which one?
Whatever you feel.
Okay.
Collusion in the NFL? Do we know this? Have you
now,
heard about
this? We don't know this, but the Bring Your Lunch Pail boys won't apologize if they are wrong. Mm.
Tell me your guys' thoughts. Is the NFL rigging these games for the Chiefs to win? Is this all part of the script? Do we know this?
I'll let Nigel go first, and then I'll weigh in on that.
Have you heard about this?
I have heard about this, and it is one and it is 100% true. They are rigging the games. They're putting in referees that are partial to the Chiefs, and they're making calls to try to get Patrick Mahomes to the Super Bowl. Tom Brady is actually in charge of all of this. He's the head of it, of the ring that's doing it. That's why they brought him into the ownership group. And
one of
their division rivals, exactly.
Right, that tracks and makes
yeah,
sense.
Yeah,
Tom Brady,
he's a mole.
Minority owner of one of their rivals, wants to see his rival team win.
Yeah, and who's
gotta have a cover up,
hyper competitive, and and wouldn't ever want anyone to win more Super Bowls than him. It's complete malarkey. But there have been some borderline calls, I think, that other teams wouldn't necessarily get. But I think that's just like part of the game. And when you're when all these people are hyper focused on it and everyone's saying it, and then one of those calls happens, which happens in every single game. Like, there's always a 50-50 call in every game. Seems like the Chiefs seem to be getting a lot of them, but when you have that superstar, you kind of get the superstar treatment sometime. It's been a thing in every sport. Like, when MJ was doing his thing, everyone was bitching about MJ calls. When the Pats were doing it, everyone was complaining about Tom Brady, and now he's a cheater. Now it's the Chiefs' turn. So it's just human nature, I think, at some capacity.
Yeah, I mean, kind of just to build on that, is that, yeah, I don't think there's any conspiracy, because, A, if there was a conspiracy by the referees, why would the Kansas City Chiefs be the team that they've decided to champion?
Taylor Swift.
No, but they won long before Taylor Swift was ever there.
Yeah, but Taylor Swift's there now.
Yeah.
Have you heard that? Like,
if the NFL wanted to rig it, why wouldn't the Giants and the Jets and the Chargers and the Rams and the Cowboys be in the Super Bowl every year?
Yeah.
Right? New York, Dallas, and L.A. If you're going to rig it, why wouldn't you put them or the Bears, you know, like your major, major market teams? Kansas City isn't a small place by any means, but it's not one of your biggest markets in the NFL.
No.
So that doesn't make sense on the jump. And to kind of build off of what Nigel was saying, is that literally if you watch Seahawks games, and, like, you know, I always make the joke when we were watching it that it's like, well, if that was Tariq Woolen, they'd call it. So, like, everyone feels like their team doesn't get the calls or whatever. The difference is that the Chiefs have been in the AFC Championship game 7 years in a row. The reason why people think, much like you're saying with the Patriots, the reason why people think that there's a conspiracy and they get all the calls is because they're in all of the games that have the most attention.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I promise you that the Browns versus the Tampa Bay Buccaneers have some questionable calls, but nobody's watching that at 10 a.m. Pacific time, you know, on a random Sunday to be like, oh, that was a terrible call. But it's like, when the Chiefs are on, they're prime time, and especially in the playoffs, they just get exposure more. Do they get more calls? Yes, because they're on TV more. They don't get preferential treatment. I don't think so. Doesn't mean there aren't calls that are kind of questionable, like Josh Allen looking like he got the first down on the sneak.
Yeah.
Xavier Worthy looking like he didn't catch the ball on that one, but they give him a catch. Like, but that's, I think that's every game. The difference just is that the Chiefs, they've played the most playoff games the last 7 years, so they've had the most opportunities for questionable calls to be on a huge stage.
Yeah.
Right? It's just a product of opportunity.
Florio also said something on Softy and Dick's show that when I was listening, that is pretty easy to tell that there's not, and he was saying there's enough, if there was some kind of conspiracy in the NFL, there's enough disgruntled ex-NFL employees like someone would have said something to someone at some point, and this would be common knowledge. Like, if it was,
sorry, did you not hear Arian Foster years ago talk about the script?
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Yeah. So someone high up in the NFL, like there's enough people that are disgruntled and pissed off because they got fired or whatever else, that this would be common knowledge. Yeah. So it's not,
it's just like every big brain conspiracy is that, like, the one true flaw in all of it is that I don't know how you think that this many people could collude together and not leak this out somehow.
Yeah.
It's impossible. You can't put five people in the room together with a secret without it getting out.
Yeah.
How would thousands of people collude together to make this happen? But yeah, we live in a world now where there's social media. You kind of mentioned, like, Michael Jordan. Is like, I think there is some truth that, yeah, like, you know, you get the superstar calls if you're Michael Jordan, but there isn't social media where every time there's a call, there's 1,000 people on X posting a slow-mo video of how they messed up the call.
Yeah.
You know, and everyone having a air quotes voice or an opinion, and they're allowed to express it. Whereas, like, you know, in the 90s, you watch SportsCenter, and if they cut it up into the highlight, then you see the controversial call. If they don't, then you don't really know.
Yeah.
Or if you read your paper and the paper says it, like, that's kind of the only outlets you have to tell you if there was something that was off, unless you watched it live.
Yeah. And the low definition TV was not good enough to see the reach in foul that happened or didn't happen.
Yeah. So I think it's kind of silly, but I don't know. I think it's funny because also I think we've talked about this before, is that everybody likes to bitch about it. And, you know, I'm sure if you put your average poll out there, people aren't necessarily rooting for the Eagles, but they are rooting to see the Chiefs lose. But at the same time, everybody loves a dynasty. All the best ratings are always when you have these power teams that are in there and they're recognizable. I don't think the NFL would have suffered if the Commanders and the Bills made it, but definitely seems like the Eagles and the Chiefs are going to draw even more attention because they have that stardom and power, which I guess is why people like to assume that there's some sort of conspiracy. But I don't think the NFL would be hurting if the Chiefs didn't make it to the Super Bowl. I think everyone would still be watching.
Agreed.
Well, part of that conspiracy, too, is that people are saying that this will be the lowest rated Super Bowl in history as well.
It'll probably be the highest rated.
Exactly.
Yeah. So the NFL always wins.
The house always wins. So how do you guys feel about your NFL playoff predictions so far? We're down to the Super Bowl, but how do you feel how it played out throughout the last couple weeks?
Well, I had the Chiefs from the beginning, so I'm feeling pretty good that, you know, I said that seems like they're in line to win their third straight, so I'm feeling pretty good about that. We didn't do one last week, so the Lions, when they lost, we'd kind of talked about it. It was a bit surprising, but at the same time, it seems like it kind of went a little bit how we said it could have. Not to say that we were right, but it's just like your defense has been so banged up. Your offense, like, yeah, you score a lot of points, but like if things aren't working right, it can be tough, and you can kind of just get punched in the mouth, and it seems like that's what happened.
Yeah, just
unraveled. And they turned the ball over 5 times or something in that game. Just, and you don't have the defense that can recover from 5 turnovers, you know. It's not the Seahawks of 2013 where you can win a game.
Even with
13
an elite
to
defense,
10.
It's pretty hard to come back from 5
yeah,
turnovers.
That's, yeah, even with an elite defense, but, like, you're not going to turn the ball over 5 times and then somehow hold them to field goals every time and still win the game, you know, 20 to 15, right? So
yeah, and then and then the Commanders went out there and looked much like the Lions did from the week before and turned the ball over, what, 3 or 4 times? And
yeah, against the Eagles.
Against the Eagles, and then gave up big plays and got punched in the mouth early in that game and kind of had a bunch of stupid penalties throughout the game where, I mean, there were multiple times where Saquon or someone ran out of bounds and they hit him, got 15 yards, had a holding call, you know, all sorts of things that entire game where they just shot themselves in the foot.
Did you guys see, by the way, I still haven't heard the actual audio of the ref saying it, but I heard somebody saying what he said, is that at one point the Eagles are getting ready to run the tush push, you know, on the 1 yard line. And I think it was that Luvu, the linebacker. He like jumps over the line before they move the ball up. He does it again. They move it up, you know, now at this point, a quarter yard. They jump again, and I think the ref at one point is like, if you do it again, we're giving him a touchdown.
Yeah.
Like, I've never heard that before. Like, I get the idea behind it that it's like, we can't move the ball forward anymore. You can't just keep breaking the rules, but I thought that was interesting. I never heard a ref say that.
I heard it because I was watching at that point, and whoever their like rules analyst was had said it before the play, like after the second one. He's like, if they do it again, the officials have the ability to award points for like delay of game, basically. And so he said it, and then right after that, they did it again, and then the ref said it. The ref said that, and then they jumped offside again, but it was a different player, and so they warned them one more time and said, if there's another offside penalty, then points will be awarded. So
that was nuts.
Yeah, that was weird. I've never seen or heard that before, but I can't remember the exact rule that he stated that it was, because he kind of followed up after they ended up scoring the touchdown and said that there's a rule with that. Basically, like, I can't remember what exactly it was. It's like some kind of delay a game penalty or like spirit of the game kind of penalty, right, that they can award, the refs can elect to award points to the team. That would have been wild.
You think, I think especially if the Eagles win, but regardless, you think they ban the tush push after this season?
I don't think so. Not after this year. I think it's going to be a conversation, but I don't think it's going to get banned this year. We'll see. It's because everyone can do it. You know,
And more teams are starting to use it more.
Yeah, more teams are starting to use it. And that's what I think, if every team starts doing it. But even the teams that do it aren't nearly as successful as the Eagles are.
No.
In doing it. And so it's kind of, I heard the comparison of Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, I think it was, that when he was in college, they outlawed the dunk because he was too good and would just dunk on everyone.
I think that was Wilt Chamberlain.
Was it Wilt? Okay, maybe
it was Wilt.
Maybe it was Wilt. But they outlawed the dunk for a while, and so then he started doing the skyhook or whatever. But it just seems like it would be an odd rule to make just for one team's success, I guess.
Let me flip the question. Would you like to see them ban the tush push?
Yeah, kind of. Only because the thing that I don't like is I don't like the pushing from behind at all.
Yeah.
Not specific to the tush push, but like when a running back gets stood up and then the offensive linemen come in and push it, because it just feels like it's so much on the whim of the referee if they want to call it dead. Like, there's so many times that, at least from football 10, 15 years ago, where it's like this play would be dead, but then the guy is completely stood up and then an offensive lineman comes in and blasts them, and then he runs forward another 5 or 6 yards, and it's like, I don't really like that. Like, the tackler, especially in a league where, like, if the defensive player comes in and spears that dude, basically what the offensive lineman is doing, they'll give him a personal foul.
Yeah.
But the offense is allowed to do it. It just doesn't make sense to me. And the tush push gets caught up in that. That play itself, I have less of an issue with on that front, because it's all pretty, like, short quarters where it's like, it's more of a scrum, like in rugby. It's more when the guy's like downfield gets stood up by a linebacker. But I think you just got to get, in my opinion, I'd just get rid of all of it. Yeah. No more pushing.
Yeah, I think if you're going to get rid of it, then you need to get rid of all of it. Like,
right,
the tush push specifically, like, shouldn't be the only thing. I think it was, was it in the Oregon, Ohio State game?
No, I think that was the championship game.
Was it the championship game?
Oh, wait, which one? I guess you finish what you're going to say.
I was going to say, it was one of those that, I thought it was the Oregon game that, like, Connerly had, like, missed his block, basically, and then, like, grabbed the running back and just pulled him into the end zone.
Oh, like, well, Scataboo got that against Texas.
Oh, maybe that's what I'm talking about.
But
you
can't do that. That's illegal. You can't pull.
Yeah.
We didn't talk about that when the Arizona State-Texas game. But that's still a rule. You can't pull somebody, which is what happened
in that game.
Yeah. O-lineman drugged Scataboo across the goal line. You can do that, and they missed that call, but pushing is allowed, and I don't know. I don't like it.
Yeah.
The other thing I don't like about the Tush Push, I guess specifically, is just that even in that game, I think the Eagles game at one point, it wasn't as close. I think it was the Eagles one. It had to have been because we're talking Tush Push. That it's like, you can't even see Jalen Hurts at all.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, like, there's just kind of some movement, and then he's half a yard past the first down. And they're like, yep, that's a first down. No problem. It's like, how do you, I guess he's laying on top of everybody, so he's not down, but he's not actually moving forward.
Yeah.
So isn't his forward progress stopped? But then all of a sudden he regains some momentum once everyone's, I don't know. It's an ugly play. I don't really like it, but you know, teams in all different sports and eras, like, you find something in the rule book that's not wrong and you are able to exploit it and do it better than everybody else, you should do it.
Yeah.
It's their secret weapon and it makes them a dangerous team. So until somebody does stop it, which is kind of the point of my original question, is the only way you're going to stop it is if the NFL makes a mandate that you can't do it anymore. Otherwise, as long as Jalen Hurts is in the league, that's the most guaranteed one or 2 yards you're ever going to get on the football field.
Or these defenses learn how to actually, like, do a scrum, like rugby style. I feel like that's the biggest problem, is that all these players go and try to jump over the pile, and that never works. You're like, the whole point is that you need to have people, like, on the ground going head-to-head against each other, and that, like, that's the rugby scrum. You, like, you counter it with your force versus their force and push back. And so everyone just, like, dives down low, and then guys jump over the top because that's been the traditional way to stop people, because they're jumping over the, you know, you're handing it to the running back and they're going to jump over the pile and you meet them in the air. Doesn't work with this. Like, you have to actually use all the force that you have on the other side to push back against it, and no one does that. And so it's effective.
I think the problem, though, still is that, like you said before, everyone's allowed to do it, but nobody does it as well as the Eagles. It's because the Eagles are the only team that has Jalen Hurts on their team, who's a quarterback who squats 600 pounds, and he's also not that tall. He's not short, but he's probably, what, 6 foot, maybe 6'1". So he's not Josh Allen, who's 6'5", tough to get low. He's got tremendous lower body strength. Like, he's kind of a one-of-one player to do it, and that's why it works.
Yeah.
Because, like, you saw, like, to bounce around is, like, the Bills-Chiefs game, you know, for all the conspiracy stuff, that it's like Josh Allen and the Bills got stuffed on their QB sneaks a bunch in that game. A play that they've been not as successful as Philly in the Tush Push, but they've been reliant on him to get those one and a half yard plays. And the Chiefs stopped him, like, 3 or 4 times in that game.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's because the Chiefs going to do that to the Eagles in the Super Bowl. Maybe, but I doubt it. But the difference is they have Jalen Hurts, and Josh Allen is also a plenty capable runner, but he's not Jalen Hurts.
Yeah. Well, the Chiefs, when they do it, they bring in Kelce now, because Mahomes got hurt last year when they were doing the Tush Push.
When they're on defense.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Right. I mean, they're not going to run this. I'm not saying the Chiefs are going to run a sneak.
Yeah.
Gotcha. I mean, when they're on defense trying to stop Jalen Hurts. But, yeah, you're right. They do bring in Kelce, just like the Ravens were bringing in Mark Andrews. But anyways, that's probably enough on the Tush Push. Got a little off the rails there.
No, you're all good. What do you guys think about the Super Bowl? Are you guys excited about this matchup?
Hell, yeah, I am. That was one of the best Super Bowls I've seen that didn't involve the Seahawks, I think, a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
And I expect more of the same.
I think it's a fun matchup. You got two really good defenses and two really good offenses going against each other. It's going to be interesting. I think that it's the two best teams, you know, at the end of the day. So it's not I think it's a great matchup. I would have loved to have seen other teams in there just for, like, my own personal reasons, like, see the Lions, see
Eagles and Chiefs have won Super, obviously the Chiefs, but even the Eagles won one, what, in 2017?
Yeah.
They're not that far removed. So it would have been fun to see a new face, but.
Yeah, but I think the matchup is good, and it's going to be a fun game. And you have, in my mind, the two best teams. Teams that, at the beginning of the season, if you're a betting man, it's like, I would bet on those two to be there at the end. So,
well, I think your Niners were the NFC favorites, but the Eagles were probably the second.
I think they were right there.
Or maybe the Lions, but you know, they were. right in that same, maybe they're the third or fourth, but it's, you know, splitting hairs at that point. But yeah, I think they're definitely the two best teams, probably in the entire NFL, but definitely the best team in the NFC and the best team in the AFC.
Yeah.
Do you think Philly fans at all kind of feel silly at this point, wanting to get rid of their head coach in the middle of the season with the success they've had this basically the entire time that he's been there?
Probably not, because they're Philly.
I don't think
they're Philly fans, but
I think this is a fake thing. That. But I saw a meme that was like, "You don't have to worry about saying this stat because 50% of Philadelphia residents are illiterate."
Did you guys see the video? I think Nigel saw it, but after the Eagles won the NFC Championship and they're all out on the streets partying, all the fans and stuff, and the guy just in the middle of the crowd is just shooting a pistol up in the air and no one's reacting to it. Yeah, it's like that's just a normal day in Philly.
Can you imagine if the Bills would have won and it was Bills Mafia and the Philadelphia faithful in New Orleans?
Just the city would have burned down.
Yeah, Hurricane Katrina 2.0.
Yeah, seriously.
So what's your guys' Super Bowl predictions? We already know Luke's, because he's been calling for the Chiefs all year. So I'll hand it off to Nigel.
I'm going to go with the Eagles, because that was my playoff Super Bowl pick.
I thought you had the Chiefs winning it.
Did I have the Chiefs winning it?
You could change it.
You're allowed to change it.
I can go check the tape. You definitely had the two teams.
Yeah, I know I had the two teams.
I thought you said maybe you had the Chiefs. Maybe I
did go Chiefs, because...
Well, it doesn't matter. You can change it now.
I'm going to change it now, just for the sake of going against Luke, and I'm going to go Eagles. Eagles win it.
I don't even think I'm allowed to choose like who's going to win, because I went like every team that I've chosen to win has lost, including the national championship for college football.
I was going
to
say, were you 0 for?
Yeah, I was 0 for.
That's hard to do.
Yeah. I mean, the Texans won. I'd give you a half point because we're tracking back, because we didn't do picks last week.
I chose the Texans to beat the Chiefs.
Right. I was going to say, I'll give you a half point on that, because A, you said that mostly to be different. You're like, I'll go different and I'll go Texans. And they covered when the punter ran out of the back of the end zone for a safety to give the Texans the cover. So I'll give you half a right point on that, because you were picking wins and losses. But if you would have bet that on the spread for the Texans, that would have been a pretty sneaky backdoor cover for you.
Okay.
But yeah, you didn't really get any of the other ones, right? You had the Ravens, the Rams. Yeah. No, the Rams lost to the Eagles.
That's right.
And then you had the Lions. We were 0 for on picks that we were unanimous in.
Yeah.
That's right.
See, I should have been cute and went with the Commanders upsetting the Lions. I was going to pick either one of those to be different, and I went the wrong route. I was really trying to be spicy that week.
That's okay.
It's all right. I'll go with my pick. Sorry, Nigel. I'm going to go with the Eagles, too, so they're going to probably lose.
Yeah, that's the kiss of death. Well, they're the only team in football that starts off each series on with 1st and 9 and not 1st and 10 with the tush push success. So that's a pretty good advantage for them.
It's also a nice advantage too when your running back just takes off for a 67-yard touchdown to start the game in the AFC or the NFC championship.
Yeah, that definitely helps too. Saquon, I mean, it seemed like he was kind of nursing an injury in the back half of that game, but if he's healthy, he's tough to stop. I think that'll be the difference in the game. If he has a big play or two that can push him over the top.
And that's really all it seems like, is that this isn't an indictment on Barkley, but it's like, I didn't watch every single snap of these games, but you can look at his runs is that honestly in the playoffs, his median carry, you know, as opposed to like your mean average.
Yeah.
His like median carry is like 3 yards.
Yeah.
Because like even the Rams, it was like 0 yard run, 1 yard run, 2 yard run, 0 yard run, -3 yard run, 70 yard run. That it's like he's just hitting home runs.
Yeah.
And even the Commanders did that for the most part, that it was like good run fit. Well, actually, 70-yard run, first play of the game. Yeah. Good run fit, 60-yard run.
Yeah.
But it's like if the Chiefs can just – I mean, that was like what Earl Thomas and the Seahawks were so good about back in the day, to bring it back to our hometown team, is that you have that guy on the back end that it's like Earl Thomas. Most teams, that guy goes for 60 yards. Earl Thomas flies up and he tackles the guy 12 yards downfield.
Yeah.
and you don't get those huge chunk plays. So I think that's what it's going to really come down to for the Chiefs. If they stop Saquon, because they've proven, other teams have proven that you can stop him on most downs. He hasn't been that highly effective. Like Derrick Henry's a pretty good, like, he'll get you 4 or 5 yards every carry, and he can go 50.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, Saquon's not necessarily that.
He hasn't been that lately. He is that type of player, but just the way the Eagles, it feels like they've been blocking is that.
Yeah, it's either all or nothing. I don't think we talked about this, but I want to say it was against the Rams that, I don't know if I sent you guys this video, but there was like a close-up on him before one of his like 65-yard runs on the Rams where he looks at
I saw this.
Yeah. He looks at Jalen Hurts and he's like, "Watch this," and then busts it for 60. Like he knows he has a touchdown. Yeah. Like you can see
he sees the defense.
Fit, yeah. He sees the defense and like starts smiling before the play even starts, and then like calls his shot Babe Ruth style and takes it house untouched. Pretty sick. I love that.
Especially from a running back.
Yeah, exactly. Like, yeah, I'm taking this one.
I got one more thing I want to throw out since we're talking about Saquon, and it's been the return of the running back this year. We kind of talked about that early in the season, and it definitely seemed like it actually kind of held up. You guys both picked the Ravens to beat the Bills, right?
I did, yes.
Yeah, I think I did.
Yeah, I think I was the only one who picked the Bills, and I was right. One of my few ones I got right. But what do you guys think as Ravens stands that if you recall last year, the Ravens did not have Derrick Henry, and they ran the ball 9 times and lost to the Chiefs. They got Derrick Henry this year, and that was their big special weapon here. And they get into a game against the Bills. He had 16 carries, and as far as I saw, I think he had maybe eight or nine in the first half. He had like 5 or 6 on one drive in the third quarter where he ran the ball straight down the field and they got a touchdown. He had 2 carries the rest of the game. That's it.
Yeah.
I think he had 2 carries in the fourth quarter, and that was all he got in a game where they were down one score, at most one score basically the entire game. Like, how did the Ravens do that again? That it's like this was supposed to be your secret weapon, and now you have a Hall of Fame running back. And they did the same thing that they've done the last few years. They just abandoned the run game.
Yeah, dude, I don't think I understand football.
Turned it into a track meet when you had the chance to just hammer it on them all game.
Also, Derrick Henry can turn it into a track meet.
True.
Yeah.
True.
Like, so that's why I don't get it either. Even if they were down 2 scores, he's just as liable to get you a 50-yard touchdown as anybody on your team. Probably more likely.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just don't know if I understand football anymore, because I feel like not just the example that you're giving, but like, when we watch college football with the Huskies, when we've watched NFL all year, you know, all season long, it feels like all of these teams, they get into a good run or a good drive going with their running back, and they're just like, all right, abandon ship. Let's just walk away from it. And then like the thing that was working for them, it's like, no, we can't use that anymore. Like, I don't know if it's analytics or what it is, but it's like they abandoned that a lot of times, especially like fourth quarter, like, we're no longer going to run the ball. It's like, well, you're still in the game. Like, it's still a one score game. You can still utilize your running back. It's not like you're having to drive, you know, like you're dealing with the clock in this situation. So I guess I'm just more confused why we've seen it so often. We've had this conversation, maybe not on the podcast, but we've had the conversation often amongst ourselves.
Yeah, I don't know. It just seems like it's overthinking it, getting away from traditional football, and especially in that Bills game, it makes no sense to me, because like I said, they gave it to him, like, basically, I think Justice Hill had a few carries in that drive, but they basically ran the ball every single play, marched right down the field, scored a touchdown, and I don't know that they scored another touchdown until right at the end when Mark Andrews then dropped the 2-point conversion. That it's like, I don't know. Do you have that big long drive where you're super effective running it, and then your whole offense is like, great, now they totally won't expect us to pass, and so we have to do that? It's like, well, or you could just do what works.
Yeah,
I don't know.
I'm sure part of it is how it's defended, for one, but completely abandoning it like that is pretty wild. Because like, if I'm a defense and Derrick Henry just ran down the field 6 times in a row and punched in a touchdown, you're probably saying, we're not going to let that happen again. We're going to make Lamar beat us. And that's not really a good poison to pick either. And he,
but it is, like, not to, I love Lamar Jackson, but like, it just feels like it's gets proven true every year, is that in the playoffs, whether it was, you didn't have Derrick Henry before, but I feel like most teams are like, how do the Ravens beat us? It's if they run the ball, especially with Lamar back then. But it's like, if they run the ball, we're in trouble. Make them throw it. Now they have Derrick Henry, and I feel like it's even more that it's like, make him throw the ball, because yeah, if him and Derrick are running it, we're going to be in trouble. And they lose every year.
Yeah. I guess I didn't really realize it happening at the time in that game, and I don't remember how many drives they had down the stretch there, but I know, I think Tan and I, when we were watching the end of, that game, maybe it was you and me, I can't remember, but when they had when they had the 2-point conversion at the end, there was a penalty before that, or there was some kind of penalty, so the 2-point conversion was from the 1-yard line, and it was like, you got to hand this off to Derrick Henry, right? Like, this is easy yeah. money for him. 1 yard, like, you go tie the game up here easy. Then they don't do that. They run a little RPO action, and
it worked.
It worked. It was open, but, like, it was also thrown late, thrown a little behind him. Should he have caught it? Yes, but it's...
You know, it wasn't a perfect execution.
It wasn't perfect execution, and at least from... my understanding from Hugh Millen's take on it is that I think that play is supposed to be thrown on the 7th step, and it was thrown on the 9th step of the drop. Like, that's how you draw it up for the quarterback, is 7th step, it's out of your hands, and that didn't happen.
Well, I know that's true, because not to give Mark Andrews a pass, because he still should have caught it, but at that point, he's about to back up into the pylon.
Yeah.
That ball is supposed to be on him in time that he can just turn and put the ball over the goal line. Like, at that point, he would have had to fall in backwards.
Yeah, exactly.
So, like, it is late.
Yeah.
He still should have caught it and would have scored, but it's like, it's not perfect execution. You don't have to be the brilliant mind of Hugh Millen to know that he was on 9 steps instead of 7, which I could have guessed that.
There's just a lot less that can go wrong, though, if you're on the 1-yard line.
It just reminds me.
Hand it off to your best player, your second best player.
I don't think we weren't recording super, consistently. But do you remember earlier in the season, around the time that you were mentioning that Philly fans wanted to fire Sirianni, when on like 3rd down, where they could have just ran the ball, and there's like no timeouts left. I can't remember who they were playing, but they throw it to Saquon out of the backfield, and he just drops it.
Yeah.
And then they end up losing that game.
Yeah, the Eagles. Yeah, I remember.
Yeah.
I remember,
and it's like, too. One of the, it's like, you're right that the play worked, but it's like, you're just overthinking it.
Yeah.
You can run the ball right up the middle. There's a good chance that Saquon can get, I don't remember how many yards it was.
It was just a 3rd and 1, because it was to.
I thought it was like 3 or 4 yards, but even still, it's like, you can run the ball and kill the clock down to like 12 seconds, 15 seconds. Instead, now you're giving them the ball with 50 seconds left on the clock.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's just it, and so like, oh well, the execution just didn't match up. Like, it was the right play call. It's like, it clearly wasn't. I know that that's not how you're supposed to really gauge these things, but it's just like, you're just flying in the face of traditional football wisdom.
Yeah.
So I don't
that
know.
That being said, the Chiefs did the exact same thing in the game against the Bills, and threw it on 3rd down and 2 or whatever it was at the end of the game, and executed it and finished the game off instead of maybe not getting the yardage, because they'd kind of been stuffed. And
that's then, why they're going for their 3rd straight Super Bowl, and all these other teams can't get out of the AFC Championship game. Is because
no, that's the refs that are.
And that's why I think that's a great way to kind of sum this all up and get to our break here, is that for everybody who's talking about these conspiracy theories, is that right there. They go to the Super Bowl because they don't miss on these plays. Yeah, they execute. Yeah. And if maybe we don't like that it's not traditional football wisdom, but when they do it, they don't mess up.
Yeah.
So.
Motherfucker don't miss.
One more question before we take the break. Speaking of Mark Andrews, should Dalton Kincaid caught that ball?
I'm glad you brought that up.
100%.
Yeah. That was really, it's kind of a miraculous play by Josh Allen to even get it close.
Holy smokes,
man. Like, when you saw it happen at first, you're like, oh my God, this is complete breakdown.
He's dead in the water.
Game over. This isn't going to be close to anyone. He's just chucking this up. And then you're like,
the entire front 7 was in his face.
Yeah. And then you see, like, especially on the replays, when you see it, it's like, holy cow. Like, he gave him Like, he saw him and gave him a real chance at that, and it goes right through his hands. So, yeah, he definitely should have caught it, and that might have won the game for the Bills.
It's the type of play that when Lamar Jackson wins the MVP this year, if Josh Allen makes that and they win the game, everyone would be like, wrong guy got the MVP.
Yeah.
But it'll go down as one of those moments that, like, you're not really going to remember that anymore. Much like that James Cook touchdown, too, not long before that, where he, like, had three guys draped on him and, like, extended over. It was like, that was an awesome run.
Yeah.
And it's just kind of another forgotten play in it, because all you're going to remember is that the Chiefs won again.
Yeah.
That's football, though.
I will say real quick on that is I mean, I'm not the biggest football expert in the world, but I was telling this to Tanner, I think, in the moment. It was like, they're going to blitz on this. Their Chiefs D coordinator loves exotic blitzes, especially in situations.
Spags.
Steve Spagnuolo. And so it's like, they're going to send the house and it's going to be in his face. So I thought that was a really interesting call by the Bills to go on fourth down. Like, I know it seems great to go try to get it all at once and send everyone down the field and you're going to get, but like, run a little mesh route. Like, everyone's blitzing. They're going to send the house. They did it on third down too. They're going to send the house on you. Run a little mesh, get a little crosser over the middle, easy throw.
I mean,
get the first down.
Instead of sending Dalton Kincaid 25 yards down the field, maybe just a 7-yard slant.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I mean,
run some little mesh action, little.
Well, easy for me to say, but I'm a little surprised that as soon as those people were in his face, he had Shakir running basically the same route that the Chiefs used later with the running, because he motioned in as a running back and did a little wheel route out to the left. I'm a little surprised that Josh Allen, as soon as he sees three guys running, that it's just like, that's my outlet, throw it to him. They don't have the numbers.
They also ran a corner blitz on it too, and so it's like, that's your hot right there.
Yeah,
but
tough in the moment, and he actually made a really nice throw given the circumstances.
Still hold to the.
I'm not going to question Josh Allen's decision making in the moment, because he's a stud.
Yeah, miraculous play by him to give the guy a chance, and it should have been caught.
That was my keeper, Dalton Kincaid. Look at him shine.
Super Bowl score.
37-33, Chiefs.
I'll go 33-31, Eagles.
27-24, Eagles.
Ka. Ka-ka.
All right, take a break. We'll
go
be back.
Go Birds.
Want you to be mine again, baby. I know my lifestyle is driving you crazy. I cannot see myself without you. We call them friends, don't you know how we do. I go out of my way to please you. I go out of my way to see you. And I want you to be mine.
And we're back live in the Bellevue of South Seattle, or maybe some would call it El Paso.
Beautiful El Paso.
Mm.
What was the El? Where were the
sister city?
I forget. Were the El Paso of what? Were we still the El Paso
Washington?
Of Seattle?
Yeah, sure. El Paso of Washington.
Yeah. You remember what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah,
I don't remember what we came.
Yeah, I don't remember what we came up with though.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Anyway, everyone's favorite segment is back. Kick it or punt it. This segment is brought to you by Luke's Pizza. Get your pizza from Luke, and also Nigel's HR Consulting. Here we go. First question. Duval.
Liam Cohen, Jaguars' new head coach.
Duval.
So we were talking in the break. I don't think Nigel, maybe Nigel wasn't picking up what we were putting down. Have you heard this whole saga with him becoming the head coach of the Jaguars?
No, I have not.
Well, I'll give you the Cliff Notes version and our listeners. So he's the offensive coordinator for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously had a really good season. Baker Mayfield, I think, led the league in passing yards and had 41 touchdowns. So, he's pretty coveted. He does like a Zoom interview with the Jaguars for their head coaching job. And as far as what I had heard is that basically told them in this interview, I'm not going to be the Jaguars head coach if Balky is still the GM. Not going to work with that guy. I'm like, well, okay. Goes back to Tampa Bay. Tampa Bay is like, We're gonna make you the highest paid coordinator in the NFL, in NFL history. We want you to stay. And he's like, great, let's do that. And I think it was kind of a verbal handshake agreement, the whole thing was, but it was also like, no more doing head coaching interviews, especially with the Jaguars, but like in general, like we're going to sign this deal, but like in the meantime, no more doing head coaching deals. Liam Cohen goes off the grid for like 36 hours. He's supposed to be in the office. I think he's supposed to go in and sign his contract.
Darkroom retreat.
He's gone. Can't get a hold of him. Nothing. And then, you know, after like the 36 hours of darkness, he's like, oh, I'm sorry, guys. My son was like super sick. Like we were at the hospital. My phone was dead. I didn't, like it was really serious. Unrelated, I also went to Jackson. Or in between that, I guess I left that part out, is that the Jaguars fired Balky. Unrelated to his son being sick, he also went and did a second interview with the Jaguars and accepted the head coaching job to become the Jaguars coach. Duval.
Are you kicking or punting?
I am absolutely kicking on this. I cannot get enough of this guy. He seems like a total Melvin, but he clearly knows how to call offense. I heard a guy that covers Tampa Bay kind of singing his praises that it's like, this guy's a genius. Everything he was doing with the offense, I think it's exactly what Trevor Lawrence and that offense needs. They have weapons. I think it's a great hire. We'll see, because there's a lot of good coordinators out there that aren't good head coaches. And when you listen to him talk, he just sounds like a Melvin. And I don't know that he's going to be the guy to. He doesn't strike me as a rah-rah guy, based off of his voice, which isn't really a good way.
That doesn't get you fired up.
It does. It does seem like he seems like a weird dude, but he also seems like a guy that everybody seems to really like.
Yeah.
Like, which, you know, most of the time when new head coaches are introduced and you show them, like, meeting the players, I've never seen a player come up and be like, I don't really like you, dude. You know, like, so that's not going to happen. But, like, I think he's young. I think he actually was, I think he played at Brown University as a quarterback, and he was actually really good for a Ivy League quarterback. Mm-hmm. So like he's got some cred, he's younger. I think he relates to guys and he's clearly a pretty bona fide offensive minded head coach. I think it's going to work. I think this is, you know, it's just wash, rinse, repeat, is that this is the year that Trevor Lawrence pulls it all together and throws 45 touchdowns and looks like the number one overall pick. You heard it here first.
Wow.
Wow.
That's high praise.
Much to my point, one more thing, sorry, Nigel, is that much to my point before is that like Chase Daniel was saying, is that you have a quarterback, you're paying $250 million. You need a head coach that's an offensive-minded guy that's going to walk hand-in-hand with him and get the most out of him. You can't have a defensive-minded coach that's not on the same page as your franchise quarterback. So you had to do something. If it wasn't Ben Johnson, I think Liam Cohen was the guy. So. Yeah.
Duval.
Hey guys. Yeah,
I've seen that clip about 1,000 times now. I've also seen the one of him like walking into the facility for the first time where he's just like, "Hey guys.
Yeah.
Hey guys. How's everybody doing?" And just like
really excited to be here.
Yeah, and it's just like the most awkward thing you've ever seen. That being said, I tend to agree with Luke here that I think he's highly coveted offensive mind, and that you need that with the young quarterback that's kind of been struggling but has a lot of talent. So I think all of that hopefully goes hand in hand, and that the at least offensively the Jags are going to be turning it around. So yeah, I'll kick on this one too. I also just because a guy's weird doesn't mean he's not going to be a good coach. The right. Dude from Arizona, was that 2 years ago now after Kingsbury?
Gannon.
Everyone said the same thing about him, like.
He hasn't been that good so far.
Yeah, he hasn't been horrible though. I feel like that's more. Either way, he's one that everyone kind of said the same thing about, and they're like, I wouldn't run through a wet paper bag for that guy.
Yeah,
and you know, I think the team has kind of rallied around him. So I don't think that just because he's a weirdo doesn't mean that there's not other guys. He can hire other coaches around him that are going to be the rah-rah guys, and he can be the head, you know, mastermind behind it all. So I'll kick on that one.
Would you guys Would it be a reach to say he's kind of a comparison to like Mike McDaniels? Kind of like a nerdy guy, like kind of quirky, maybe not the rah-rah guy, but is obviously finding success in the NFL.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think so. I mean, like I said, I think you're seeing this new wave of coaches, and Mike McDonald, our coach, obviously defensive, but like younger guy relates to the players a lot more.
But he's still more of a rah-rah guy, too. I mean,
that's
the guy,
he's more of a hard
brings
ass.
He brings in Navy SEALs, and he's all about David Goggins. Like, he quotes that dude all day.
He's a hard ass, and McDaniels and Liam Cohen seem more like kind of chill, offensive-minded bros. But, like...
Yeah, I can't wait until Liam Cohen shows up with his like, you know, Coke dealer glasses and haircut. And
yeah, he
like
goes full Miami Vice.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That, Jacksonville Vice.
God, that's a show I'd watch. But yeah, so I'm rooting for the guy, even though he's a Melvin nerd. And I'm rooting for Trevor Lawrence. So
I also think the Melvin nerds are also like, they're cool now, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's a different generation. They respond to different.
Nerd is in.
Yeah.
Yeah, they respond to different types of coaching now.
Also, it from all indications, like the both Tampa Bay and he was with the Rams before that, so he's a Sean McVay disciple. Like, I think both parties have like nothing but great things to say, and all the players that have been with him have nothing but great things to say. So, I think he's a big time locker room guy, even though, I mean, it's got to be hard if you've never really been the face to then go in and be like you're doing press conferences and kind of the star of the show. If you're an awkward person, like it's going to shine pretty quickly. So
he was also the play caller only for 1 year. Cause wasn't Dave Canales.
Yeah.
The OC the year before. And then he took the Panthers job.
Yeah.
So he's got a good resume as being a guy in the background, like you said, being on the Rams and then on Tampa Bay, but he really only had 1 year in Tampa where he was the true play caller.
Yeah.
And he wasn't even the guy. Now he's the guy for the Jaguars, but I'm all in. I'm rooting for him. We like Jacksonville.
Duval.
All right, I'll just lead the next one into another quote. We're the freaking New York Jets, and we're built for this shit. Tell me about Aaron Glenn. Kick it or punt on Aaron Glenn. Hire the New York Jets.
I don't know. I didn't see any of his pressers, so I don't know. I didn't
that
see
was
any
it.
Of that part. But
now, I would run through a brick wall for that guy.
Yeah, I like Aaron Glenn, and I'm rooting for the guy, but I'm going to punt on this one. The Jets organization is just such a heaping pile of garbage and has been forever. I don't know who can succeed there. I don't know how anyone can succeed, and the market's huge. Like, I just don't. Like, the pressure's on you all the time. I just don't think that he's going to be the one that pushes him over the top. Maybe I'll be proven wrong, but I'm going to punt on that one.
Yeah, I'm going to punt as well. More on, I think this is kind of what Nigel's saying, more on the side that I'm punting on Aaron Glenn taking the job versus the Jets hiring him. I think the Jets hiring him, like, that was a good candidate to hire.
Yeah, absolutely.
But... yeah, the Jets are just kind of a dumpster fire. I did see, or I heard a quote from Woody Johnson, their owner, where he kind of took some accountability that it's like, I haven't been doing a good job, and I think I've been overstepping, more or less to summarize, is just like, I've been overstepping and not letting the people who I need to hire to do these things do these things. So maybe he's having a little bit of, he's having some reflective moments here that it's like, I've been the problem and I need to step back and let my power players do what they're supposed to. So maybe it'll come together, but I doubt it. He's owned the team for a long time and he's never done it. So why would a 70-year-old man who's done things the same way the entire time all of a sudden do an about face? But
yeah, I mean, it's kind of the same. You're hiring the same guy as Robert Sala.
That's what I was going to say, too. It's like, why'd you get rid of Robert Sala just to bring in a guy who's kind of...
Yeah, defensive and like outspoken.
Aaron Glenn's good, but... Yeah, Aaron Glenn's good, but it's like, is he any better of a defensive coordinator than Robert Sala ever was? I don't know that that's true.
Yeah, I wouldn't.
Maybe he's a better leader in his time with the Lions and Dan Campbell, and he's kind of bringing that same energy. You know, the rah-rah, run-through-a-brick-wall type of thing, you know, which kind of is the yin and yang from the Liam Liam Cohen conversation we're just having. And maybe that's what the Jets need, you know, as a guy like that. But not to go down the Aaron Rodgers rabbit hole, but it's like, it feels like he's still just going to be running the offense and you're not going to have any control on that side of the ball. And you might make their defense good. And what's that going to get you? 7, 8, 9 wins? Because Robert Saleh just did that.
Yeah.
So I'm punting on that.
Well, it's keeping the Big Apple. Let me ask you this question. Did Aaron Rodgers' documentary, Enigma, change your life? Kick it or punt it?
Well, we haven't finished it yet.
Well.
Oh, did you guys finish it?
We finished it.
Yeah, we finished it. Were you not there?
I don't think I watched. I thought there was one more episode.
No, there's three.
Yeah, I thought I watched two.
Uh-oh.
We watched two in one night, so.
Well, so that would be a punt for me because I don't even remember watching the third episode, and I'm sober, so there's no way I could say that I was pissed drunk and I don't remember watching it, but that was terrible.
You said kick?
I said punt on it, changing my life.
Oh.
It changed my life in that I'll never get that time back. So that was life-changing. I had to watch.
Do you feel like Aaron is a victim in life?
Not even slightly. I think he is an instigator.
His parents said he was soft.
Yeah. He's an instigator and will not take blame for anything in his life. It seems like everything's everyone else's fault. He has to be the smartest guy in the room. Always, like, it's a complex, and doesn't mean he's not a great football player and probably the best quarterback talent wise of all time, but that can only take you so far. He won his Super Bowl when he was, I think, still had a chip on his shoulder, and ever since then I think he's thought he's the greatest thing of all time, probably is, but doesn't reflect in his team's capability to win. Now, they had a good run there for many years at Green Bay, but especially now, I don't think it plays well with everybody. That being said, I think every teammate probably says that he's the greatest guy, so I don't know.
Everyone in that documentary said he was the greatest guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, when you produce the documentary, you get to pick the people that go in front of the camera.
Yeah. But I think historically, you're right. Like most people have said, there aren't too many players, at least, that go against him. You know, or at least in the media, there hasn't been many that say that guy sucks. So I don't know, but I mean, it did not change my life.
I mean, I think the thing is in, like, they talk about it a little bit in the documentary, you know, where it's like, yeah, he could be the guy that in practice, like, guy drops a ball and he's going to chew your ass. And it's like Michael Jordan does it and makes a documentary about himself. And everyone's just like, that's why he's the greatest of all time. Mm-hmm. Like, chip on his shoulder. You know, I took that personally. Like, you know, it's funny, but it's also like real and true because he won 6 rings. So it's like it validates all of the things that he's done, where Aaron Rodgers was super successful. But I think some people can pick apart the fact that it's like, well, you only have 1 Super Bowl, and it's like you're kind of just being a dick. Like, what you're doing wasn't good enough to make your team get over the hump. Now, football and basketball are completely different sports. You're 1 of 22 on the field, and you only play one side of the ball.
Yeah.
You know, it's not basketball, right? So one player can't have the same impact. But I think that's where it falls a little short, is that I think he's trying to kind of portray himself in that Michael Jordan, like, I have a huge chip on my shoulder, all these things that have happened, all it was motivation and fuel, and I'm the smartest guy around. And it's like, well, if you're the smartest guy around, you probably would have figured out a way to win more than 1 Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Adapt and change and do something to make your team better.
One thing that documentary did convince me of is that Aaron Rodgers will 100% be back next year. That part, I think, is pretty...
You're
pretty
kicking on that.
I'm kicking on that he will be back with someone next year, a team, if someone will take him.
Minnesota Vikings, I told you at the beginning of the year.
Maybe. It could be them. It could be him.
The difference between someone like Michael Jordan and Aaron Rodgers is that Michael Jordan's whole thing was that he was focused on one thing and he was passionate about being the best at his thing. Aaron Rodgers, on the other hand, is focused on being the smartest person in the room, as you guys said, in every situation. He has to involve himself in everything that goes on with every event and never be the person that's wrong and will never take accountability for being wrong.
Right.
It's just a different – it's not even the – it's it's kind of the same of what he's trying to do, but it's not the same at all.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I think he wants to be great, and I think he probably does the things to be great. Like, it looks like he works hard. I mean, it's a documentary about him working hard. I also think that in the midst of all that, though, you have the story going on about, like, that was happening at the beginning of the season that we talked about, and it's now pretty clear that the whole reason he was gone was because he was filming this documentary and doing...
In Egypt.
And, like, doing these things that would be part of the documentary. And so I just...
Yeah, it's the last guy you want chewing you out in practice about how you you're messing up when it's like, dude, you haven't even been here the entire time.
Yeah.
And now you're reaming me.
You're out filming a documentary about yourself and how great you are and not practicing with the team right now and getting everyone better.
He also strikes me as the person, too, that just needs everyone around him to tell him that he's good, that he's the best. And I don't think Michael Jordan was that type of person at all, where he didn't care what your opinion was.
Yeah, he just knew he was the best.
Yeah, I was going to say, the difference is that Aaron Rodgers wants everyone to tell him he's the best. Michael Jordan just told everybody he was the best.
and then he didn't need it.
He didn't need anyone's permission.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Anyways.
All right. Next question. Aaron Rodgers. Yeah. Let's go back on the coaching carousel here. Pete Carroll coming to the Raiders. How do you guys like that?
I think it's a good pickup for him. I'm going to kick on this one. Pete's a culture guy. Everyone knows that. We've all hammered that home a million times. The Raiders are an organization that is massively in need of a culture change. Now, that all being said, I don't know that that's going to lead to like great success. I don't know if they're going to win a Super Bowl anytime soon. But their ownership group, Mark Davis is his dad.
Yeah.
Mark Davis has been a piece of trash for as long as we can all remember. I just don't see how things are going to change ultimately there. Because at the end of the day, he's still, even though he hired Tom Brady to kind of help out with some of these decisions and make sure that he doesn't put his foot in his mouth and do the wrong thing, I still think ego is going to come in with these billionaires, and it's ultimately going to keep them out of major success.
Yeah. I think Mark Davis said a similar thing to Howie Johnson, that like he did kind of hint at that it's like Tom Brady's here to take over some of these things because I haven't been doing a good job and more of the same stuff. But again, completely agree that you've lived your whole life a certain way. Like, tough for you to change now. I'm kicking on the Pete Carroll. Same things kind of Nigel said. This isn't a permanent solution. I think that he only got a 3-year deal with a fourth-year option.
Mm.
So, yeah, I mean, the Raiders need a ton of talent, and I think Pete Carroll's a good guy to build up some culture. You're going to go through some lean seasons, acquire some talent, and if it does all turn quickly, he's proven that he can win a Super Bowl, and so he's a good coach for that. But more likely, he's a good steward to pass the keys off to somebody who can take it to the next level while he builds a good culture that somebody else can walk into, acquire more talent, and maybe by the end of his 3 years,
push it over the top.
You can get a good coach that is younger and will have a good foundation built there. I don't think they're hiring him to be a guy that's going to turn this around right away.
There's no way. There's not enough time. He's 75 years old on a 3-year deal.
And you still play in the same division as the Chiefs,
mm-hmm.
and the Chargers and the Broncos, who all made the playoffs. So, like, yeah, exactly. It's like you don't need to make big waves in 3 years. You just need to start building up the foundation.
In the right direction.
Yeah.
That division's pretty wild now, though, with the head coaches, Sean Payton, Pete Carroll, Andy Reid, and then Harbaugh.
Yeah, Harbaugh and Pete Carroll, they just
always find each other.
Yeah, that'll be fun.
Yeah, that's kind of cool.
I'm happy for Pete.
How about them Cowboys? Huh?
How about them?
Brian Schottenheimer, are you excited about that?
Not as excited as he probably is.
The Big D?
Man, what a hire. It's funny because when
Luke is so kicking on this.
I am kicking on this because the Cowboys... Let them burn. I just want to see it. When they were talking and making it sound like they were going to hire him, I was like, this is the same Schottenheimer that was the Seahawks OC, right? That was here for a cup of coffee. It got shipped out, which I think in retrospect, you know, Russell Wilson was kind of turning through OCs every couple of years, so doesn't necessarily make him a bad offensive coordinator, but A, it goes into exactly what I was saying the other week when we're talking about it, that it's like they'll just retread these guys. He's got a name, Schottenheimer, that like NFL teams for some reason just keep going to the well, that it's like we'll just give the children of legendary coaches another opportunity, even though he's never proven anything. But
let's give him the biggest job in football.
I would say if you're an up and coming coach, the best way to get a head coaching job is probably to marry the daughter of somebody with a famous name and take their last name. That's what I would do. find a Schottenheimer or a Kubiak or somebody, find their daughter and take their last name. Be like, all right, I'm ready to be a head coach now. I got the name. But I think my favorite part of this, because I was teasing this again during the break, is that I don't think you guys didn't hear the press conference.
No.
So, the broad point here is that, like, the Cowboys, they're never going to hire anybody serious because Jerry Jones is the star. He's the head coach of the team. He doesn't want anybody. So even when they're talking about Deion, I'm sure Deion would like that job, but Jerry would never give it to him because even though they said that they offered him, but I don't think that's real. I think that was just him doing a favor for a friend so he could go get some more money. Because if Deion comes to town, no one's talking to Jerry Jones. And I never heard this before until like a week ago. I didn't realize that Jerry Jones literally does a post-game press conference at the exact same time the head coach does. I knew he did a post-game press conference for every game, which most owners do not do, or GMs, or owner/GMs, but he does it at the exact same time as the head coach so that they'll talk to him and not the head coach. Right? So why would anybody want to be the coach there? So with that in mind, is that I had heard that, you know, the introduction press conference for Brian Schottenheimer, and he's talking, you know, and he's saying all the things that most people say, and he starts to get really emotional because I think Marty Schottenheimer has passed, his dad, you know, is a legendary coach, passed. He's just like, wish my dad was here to see this. Like, he'd be so proud that now I'm the head coach of the Dallas Cowboys. So then Jerry Jones takes the stage, and he guesses what he talks about. Anything?
How he's his daddy now?
Close. About his relationship with his dad, and he gets all emotional about his dad passing. Mind you, Jerry Jones is 80 years old. His dad passed away a long time ago. And he literally just, like, steals his script. It's just like, my dad would be so proud. And, like, starts getting, like, teary-eyed. That's like, it's a fucking clown show. Like, he was, it honestly strikes me as, like, a teenager who's like jealous and is like, they're all getting emotional because Brian Schottenheimer's talking about his dad. I'm going to go up there and talk about my dad now. I am kicking.
I don't know how I follow.
You got to hear this shit.
Yeah, I'm going to have to listen to this. I know very little about Brian Schottenheimer. What I do know is that Cowboys offense is going to be good probably regardless because they have talented players, but they're going to be the same old Cowboys. Like, they'll go win 9 or 10 games, assuming everybody's healthy, Dak's healthy, and they'll piss it away in the playoffs, and it'll be the same old story. So I'll punt on it. I don't think he's going to move the needle, and for all the reasons Luke said, it's a shell of a head coach.
Jerry Jones vanity play.
Yeah, exactly. And now I feel like it's exactly what Jerry Jones wants. Even Mike McCarthy was a kind of a, you know, bigger name head coach that's stealing his limelight. So he hired someone that's going to be out of the limelight for him. And
just a dog.
Yeah, exactly.
Just
a beat dog. So,
He also didn't even call the plays because Mike McCarthy called the plays.
Yeah. It just seems like a hire. It's just a hire because no one wants that job. You know, you could have had, historically at least, you could have any coach you want to be the Dallas Cowboys head coach, but Jerry doesn't want that.
But does anyone want that job anymore?
I don't think so.
I don't think so. But yeah, they got what they wanted. So I'll punt on it.
The story writes itself. I mean, the NFC Championship game featured his former defensive coordinator, Dan Quinn, and his former offensive coordinator, Kellen Moore, as the OC for the Eagles,
yeah,
who were in their own division.
Yeah.
And Kellen Moore, it sounds like, is going to take, I don't know if you had this on there, but
take the Saints job.
Everyone seems to think that he's going to take the Saints job.
Yeah.
He's not leaving New Orleans.
Yeah.
So.
Duval.
Yeah, not everyone can land a fucking dog like Liam Cohen.
Luke's going to come in here next week with a Jaguars visor on.
Yeah.
I said earlier, I kind of want to change my text tone to that Duval every time.
I got a listener question for you guys.
Oh, haven't done that in a while.
Let's hear it.
If you were planning a bachelor party for a guy that is really into golf, where would you go?
Money's not an issue.
Yeah.
No, with your current budget.
Current budget.
Blue boy.
Yeah. Blue boy.
Who's the driving range? Who's the listener? Is this a secret? Are you going to tell us after?
I'll tell you after.
Okay. I would, if it were me, I would go to, I can't even think of the name of it right now. Either Bandon Dunes in Oregon, or what's the one Eastern Washington that's cool.
It's by Chelan.
It's just by Chelan. I can't even think of the name of it right now.
Yeah, I'm blanking on it too. I was going to say that one too, because like, especially if you go in the summertime.
Yeah.
Like, you go hang out at Lake Chelan, play some golf. I've also heard from Kevin Calabro.
Gamble Sands. Yeah.
I've also heard from Kevin Calabro, former voice of the Supersonics, that I think Chelan Muni.
Yeah.
I think he's said also is like, it's obviously much cheaper than Gamble Sands, but is also a very nice golf course, so you can get a little 2-for-1.
Yeah.
I've also heard, it's not the cheapest thing in the world, but again, assuming you have a little bit of a budget, and we're not talking Pebble Beach or Bandon Dunes, is that I've heard that the, McMenamins, that's like down by Seaside, Oregon, or like kind of in that area.
Yeah.
I've heard that that's also a pretty sick thing, because also you have the whole McMenamins hotel bar scene, and then they have like a really nice 36, I don't know. But at least 18-hole golf course that's like right there on the Oregon beaches.
Yeah.
Oregon's beaches are much nicer than Washington's too. So like if you time it up nice in the summer, like you might actually have, as far as Pacific Northwest beach life goes, like you could have a pretty tidy little weekend there. So that would be my suggestions.
Yeah. I know Bandon Dunes has multiple courses and kind of facilities.
It's pretty pricey.
But that's pricey. I think Gamble Sands it's a pricier round, but it's, I think you get deals when you stay there and the hotel or on site are pretty affordable. And so you get like, two rounds in a hotel for a pretty favorable amount. So I would say
plus you're in that Chelan area too, and go hang out at.
If you want to go really nice golf course, but a little more budget, then I would say Gold Mountain is a really good option in Bremerton. We've done this before: do an overnighter, get an Airbnb in Bremerton, super cheap, and then there's two courses there: the Olympic and the Cascade, both really good courses, both top 10 or 15 in the state. So. And it's super affordable. It's under $100 a round, maybe a little more for the Olympic course for a daytime one, but
Not bad.
Yeah, if you're going more budget, I would say that's the more budget friendly one.
Sweet. All right, let's put a bow on the rest of the show. Tell me about the national championship. We're a little bit behind on that. That was a few weeks ago, but I think we owe it to Uncle Danny to give a recap of that. So. Start us off with Lukey.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it kind of looked like it was going to be a snooze fest, at least after the first drive. I had some real hope watching that game that Notre Dame, they came out and did exactly what they needed to do on the opening drive. Was it 7-8 minute.
I think it was over 8 minute.
Over 8 minute drive ending in a touchdown, go up 7-0. But I even told Nigel at the time they scored that, I was like, smash cut to 42-7 Ohio State. Like, they ran their quarterback 9 times on the opening drive. If that's the only way they can move the ball is him having almost double digit carries, like, it's not gonna work.
He also went straight to the sidelines and yacked right after yeah, that drive. So you knew
it was not looking
good.
You
knew he'd put it all out in the field on the first drive.
But credit to him is that, like, kind of like Uncle Danny said, is that, you know, I think it is a well coached team. They weren't gonna shy away. They got down and they're kind of got punched in the mouth, but they stayed in it. They made it a game. They had a chance. Unfortunately, again, much like I think we all said and knew, is that Ohio State was more talented. At the end of the day, you can kind of just look at that play, is that they run a 50-50 ball to Jeremiah Smith with the game on the line, and he's better and more talented, and he makes the play, and the game's over.
Yeah,
and they get into field goal range, and they cover, which was the real bummer for anyone who had Notre Dame with the points.
Yeah, I think one thing I'll say is that Notre Dame team had more fight than I even thought they would have, and more kind of offensive firepower than I thought they were capable of.
That's
Riley Leonard in that second half was throwing the ball all over the field. I can't remember if it was like that kid's name, like Gainwell, or he has like a name like that.
It was like, wasn't it like Golden House or something that?
Whatever that kid was, the wide receiver, he kind of went off in the second half and had a couple big plays, and he'd had a couple big plays in the semifinal too. So yeah, they at least showed me a lot more offensive fight than I thought that they were going to have. I thought it was going to have to be a, you know, 22 guys in a cloud of dust, or 22 guys in a phone booth, or whatever the hell I said.
Jake Greathouse.
Greathouse.
I said Golden House. Is that what I said?
Yeah.
I was close.
I knew it was a cool name.
Yeah.
It's the Golden Domers that got me.
Yeah.
Greathouse.
They showed more fight than I thought they were going to have after getting kind of dusted in that first half. But ultimately, when it came down to it, I know you had to probably go cover zero and try to sell out to stop the run on that last play to Jeremiah Smith, and he absolutely cooked on that, and they executed, got the job done, won the game. Yeah. So
kind of full circle from our conversation before, again, is that, like, Ohio State took a risk. If Will Howard overthrows that ball,
yeah,
or maybe Jeremiah Smith just 1 in 100 chance drops it.
Yeah.
All of a sudden we're saying, like, wow, that was a stupid call. Why didn't you just run the ball and, like, kill the clock? But took a chance and they executed perfectly.
Yeah. Also thought to have one critique on Notre Dame outside of getting crushed in the first half was on that fourth down and, like, 1 or 2 from 30, and they were on like the 30 or something like that, and they opted to kick a field goal to try to make it,
and missed it.
I think that would have made it a 13-point game at that point. I think they were down 16 still at that point, so it was still 2 scores. Didn't agree with that call. Thought that was a mistake on their part. I think they kind of had the momentum going, and they were rolling. They got right down the field and had gone for multiple fourth downs throughout the game and been super successful. So I thought that was a miss by them, especially with all the momentum they had going. Like, you go punch that one in, you're down 1 score with plenty of time left. I think there was 8 minutes left in the game. Like, all of a sudden Ohio State's reeling, and you didn't really take the chance to go put your foot on the throat. So thought they made a pretty bad mistake there, in my opinion.
Yeah. I mean, there's nothing they could do at this point, but I would think if you're a Notre Dame fan or a coach, you're probably looking at that tape, but it's like, we might have gave Ohio State a little bit too much credit, because as soon as we started throwing the ball to Greathouse, like, he was open and they were getting chunk plays.
Yeah,
I think they came in, maybe I'm a little off base, but it feels like they came in pretty much doing exactly what the likes of us and Danny were saying. Yeah. That it's like, we got to control the clock and, like, keep it conservative and not kill ourselves and make this a game where it's like, maybe if you would have came out and thrown the ball a little bit, like, you did have a mismatch. It sure seemed like it. That Greathouse was great.
Yeah.
You know, and maybe if you would have came out a little more aggressive, you wouldn't have fallen behind, or you would have at least made Ohio State kind of change how they were playing.
Yeah.
Which is what you accomplished in the second half, is that you kind of put them on their heels. So
especially with that cornerback Ohio State had, who led the nation in interference and holding calls, had the most penalties.
Tried to target him a little bit.
Once you started targeting him, you had a ton of success and were moving the ball down the field. So thought they, you know, after all we said about them having to run the ball, control the clock, like once they figured that out, that they could throw, maybe they should have tested that a little bit earlier and seen what was available.
Yeah. Greathouse ended that game with 6 receptions, 128 yards, and 2 tutties.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that was all in the second half, basically.
Yeah. I think, like I said, it was a good season. I'm just glad it was a good game.
Yeah.
Because definitely, about midway through the second quarter, it was just kind of like, oh, no. not again. I just want to see a good game. And like I said, credit to Notre Dame and Marcus Freeman is that, like, those guys didn't give up and they kept fighting in it. Turned out to be a pretty good game that did come down to one remarkable play by Jeremiah Smith and Will Howard to ice it. So can't complain too much. I would have preferred to see Notre Dame win, but
way she goes.
Any closing remarks?
Go Dogs.
Go Dogs.
Dogs are back.
Duval. All right. Grab the lunch pail. Punch that time card, 22 guys in a cloud of dust. See ya!
See ya!
See ya!
Duval.